I'd like to talk tonight about the essence of meditation. Fundamentally, this is not about changing how you live, but rather a rediscovery of who it is that lives. Not about changing how you live, but a rediscovery of who it is that lives. Who it is that lives? This is the perennial question. This question can never be answered by the mind, by thinking. It never can be answered by the intellect. The answer to who it is that lives can only be found in the direct living truth. And meditation has the power to reveal or uncover that truth. Radical, energetic shift in perspective from attempting to change oneself, whatever oneself is, become something different. The radical shift, energetic shift into discovering who it is that's living. It opens the door into everything being as it is, things being as they are. You could call that a complete allowing. Somewhere inside most human beings, perhaps for some conscious and for others not so conscious, there is an interest or curiosity, wondering, or a longing to completely let go. Because the sense connected with that idea of completely letting go suggests total freedom. The conditioned and habitual, not natural, habitual tendency of the mind, thinking, is to link success to some aspect of living, and this living that I'm speaking of now is progressiveness or progression, embedded in time, living in goal-oriented consciousness. The idea, feeling, and even fear can be there, which says, if I let go, or there's a complete letting go, then nothing will happen. Nothing will get done. I won't progress. I won't develop. I won't succeed. This very structure that I'm describing right now is what gets confronted in meditation and looked at and actually turned around. Turned around or turned inside out. And as even just a glimpse of who it is that lives shines through, the whole notion of progression, the whole notion of development, the whole notion of success embedded in time, in goal, and that's what success is turned upside down. So what happens then is one, so to speak, moves from trying to change things, accomplish things, improve things, and often these things are oneself or related to oneself, to simply and freely observing things without interfering. This observing things without interfering begins to open up an inner space or spaciousness. The goal-oriented consciousness, which has been in a way fed, encouraged, and supported since childhood, at least, softens, dissipates some. Trying dissipates some, or even falls away altogether in moments. And this is actually a gigantic relief. Even when it just arises in relation to breathing. Breathing without any right way to breathe, wrong way to breathe. Just breathing. Simply. Naturally. With no manipulation. Gigantic relief. Some people feel as if there's never been a natural breath before that was conscious. Somehow it's always been, to some degree or other, controlled or manipulated. Body sensations, just a glimpse of the body sensations, a body sensation, just as it is, without any manipulation or interference. And gradually, this possibility of non-interfering awareness includes more and more of what arises, until it covers all the bases. And everything is then, in an instant, as it is. At this point, it's often said that what is occurring is choiceless awareness. Because the nature of awareness is choiceless. Completely, totally allowing and receptive. And in being allowing and receptive, totally accepting. This is the nature of awareness. As the nature of awareness is realized, a natural unfolding, you could say, from that is that everything that is happening in awareness, or that awareness is touching, is allowed to be as it is. And it's always been this way. This is the primacy of awareness. It's understood, it's seen, it's realized that you don't choose to be aware. Awareness just is. Nothing happens without awareness. It's primary and essential to all experience. And it's completely impossible to pin down where this awareness is. And that's one of the beautiful expressions of it, is that it can't be pinned down. It seems to be in the area of the body, but no one can locate it specifically. Just a glimpse of the fact that nothing need be any different is so huge. It's so huge in its implications, but the impact of the insight is often overlooked. Acceptance lies therein, seeing how life is fundamentally designed, is lying therein. The insight has the power to uproot and resolve most of what ails and troubles human beings. The realization of things as they are. Thus that phrase echoes through time, is translated and spoken one culture to another, one human to another, one group to another, one time to another. Things as they are. When the desire to control things falls away, and there's clear seeing that things, all things, not just some, change by themselves, a clear aspect of the nature of reality, or reality's nature, has opened. And with this opening, large chunks, areas of struggle and suffering can and often spontaneously do fall away. No one makes them fall away. You don't do that. It just happens as this insight into things as they are, and part of that means things change by themselves. Huge chunks of struggle, strife, difficulty, stress, suffering fall away. And what has been clearly comprehended then is that a timeless and totally trustworthy friend has been discovered. And it's the friend of impermanence. It's the friend of constant, incessant change. And not only that, but that this change, this trustworthy, reliable friend of change, is unfolding itself naturally and spontaneously. And that what we often call ourselves, what we often think of ourselves to be, part of the journey into the discovery of who it is that lives, it's revealed that that which is living is a dynamic flow of change. And it's clear that no solidity exists anywhere, inside, outside, and in between. What has been uncovered is timeless for several reasons. The first is that what is sensed is so much bigger than any single thing one could ever call oneself. You could call it a truth of existence, or a truth of nature, or a truth of reality. It's so much bigger than any single thing that one could call oneself. Number two, what's timeless is also timeless because what is sensed is something that feels to be always true. And also, number three, timeless because the how, the when, and the why things change is recognized to actually reside outside of linear time, in that one cannot predict change so much more often than one can predict it. Except, it's always nice to see the exceptions, except to know that when it occurs, when change occurs, it's completely beyond one's control, and rightly so. Completely trustworthy, completely reliable, a kind of security. Prior to this awakening, security can be believed to exist in places where it doesn't at all. Security in having something be a certain way and investing in that something being that way. And it's a bit of like trying to hold one's breath and keep it there. Impossible. That's up for some moments. We do find the mind trying to secure things sometimes, doesn't it? Meanwhile, this existential truth of change, of impermanence, is miraculously, mysteriously parading in all ways, in and through all things. And this realization brings a kind of safety, a kind of security, not in permanence, but a security in impermanence. Because it's in the nature of things to change on their own. Right here, right now. No moment is exempt. No content, no feeling, no sensation, no behavior, no relationship, no place, time. The security is in the realization of this dynamic, profound, all-inclusive, can't find the beginning, can't find the end, incessant change. And in a way, this is part of the discovery of who it is that lives. As this opening occurs, the nature of things is changing on their own. What is revealed is that things actually let go of themselves. There was no one letting go of something. Things let go of themselves. Or another way to say it is, all things self-liberate. They liberate themselves from the power of this change. Now the mind sometimes, the thinking mind, the deluded mind, the habitual controlling mind, the mind that's attempting to find security where it doesn't exist, or is believed in a security that doesn't exist, may feel threatened because it itself is governed by this existential truth. And if it likes what it has found, if it's enjoying what it's discovered, if it wants to keep something a certain way, of course it will be threatened when it comes upon this insight. Because let's be very clear, the nature of insight also goes right through the brain cells. Although the insights are not thoughts fundamentally, they will affect the thoughts. This is very, very important. Because what appears at times to be unsatisfactory, unwanted, unpleasant, seemingly responsible for producing unhappiness, when those structures of thought, feeling, belief, assumption are seen in their true nature as impermanent, belonging to no one, empty phenomena, rolling on, as the monk Munindra once said, empty phenomena, rolling on. What did he mean? Empty of ownership. Empty of I, me, and mine. What happens as this touches into that which is initially viewed as unwanted, unpleasant, unsatisfactory, responsible for producing unhappiness, it's seen that these things themselves self-liberate. They let go by themselves. And it's this clear seeing that brings happiness and relief. So the essence of meditation uncovers these things. The uncovering is simply like the light shining on something that is always there. We're talking, when I say always there, I'm talking about the process level of life, not the content. The content for these different humans here may vary and does in given moments. The content, the way the actual elemental structure of existence is organized is different here in different parts of this room. But the process of how those elements are unfolding, the actual process, essential level, is the same. There's a body, there's a feeling, there's mental activity, there's perception, and there's consciousness unfolding themselves spontaneously, naturally, dynamically, and also always new and different. Even though the actual process level is the same, the content keeps changing. That's why one of the brilliant awarenesses, you could say, is to see that everything that's happening has never happened quite this way before. So it's like the light shining on something that was always there. But it was in the dark before the light touched it. And this, very important here, does not contradict the fact that the human body-mind process can work to change things physically, emotionally, mentally. Health issues, lines of work, things in one's environment, helping others in all kinds of different ways. What I'm speaking about here in terms of the nature of change, the nature of the expression of things as they are, does not contradict the fact that it's perfectly valid. At times there's deep compelling energy, passion, enthusiasm, excitement, commitment to engage with this so-called world that we share, interact with it, help others, serve. It's perfectly valid. But that even also is expressing this constant, unfolding, incessant, dynamic flow and change. Even as you say, I am now doing this work, or I am now doing this work, or I am now doing this service. This is a place where there can be this kind of confusion sometimes. There's two things fundamentally that arise from ignorance, and ignorance here means not seeing things the way they really are. Two forces that humans, many humans, are troubled with, at times quite troubled with. One is fear and the other is confusion. Not seeing things clearly. The way in which certain aspects of the life dynamic process seem to confuse, fuse into each other so that they cannot be seen clearly. Like, for example, a thought and a feeling sometimes touch one another in such a way it seems. One is not clear what the thought is, and one might not be clear what the feeling is either. For example, the feeling of suffering. If you take that just right there, the feeling of unsatisfactoriness, immediately, if that's looked at honestly and clearly, it begins to open itself, break down, deconstruct itself, unpack itself, and reveal what's actually there, which this, again, is this dynamic, unfolding flow of energy. So beyond these human acts, though, that we engage in our lives, and sometimes it's a period, and this is the most important thing one could be doing, or one must do that, and one's in love with what one is doing. And then even in some cases it's believed that one will do that for one's whole life. And then it changes, and something different is happening. And even that same thing evolves and takes a different form, although it's still a similar line of work or activity. This nature of change that's occurring in all places, all times, always, more specifically, could be expressed as the principle of arising and passing. Sounds arising, taking shape and passing. Breath arising, passing. Sensations arising, passing. Thoughts arising, passing. Sense perceptions of sight, smell, taste arising, passing. Sometimes this arising and passing seems to happen very quickly. Other times it seems much more slowly. Sometimes seemingly so slow that one assumes, an assumption arises, that that is not changing. Change is the existential truth everywhere but right there. And sometimes, even in just a day and a half of silent practice together, the perception will arise, change is true everywhere but in this knee. Or or in this back, or in this head. Meditation, the natural nature, essence of meditation, shows how life is working quite well. In fact, miraculously, even you might play with perfectly, when all controlling and interfering is gone. It's doing just fine. And that the more the controlling and interfering jumps into the mix, it sometimes can be clearly observed, the more difficult, complicated, convoluted, stressful, and painful life becomes. Yet as the meditation opens, if this is what's happening, this controlling, interfering tendency, then it becomes clear. Slowly but surely, and once it's clear, it's sudden. That's the way insight works. It's sudden, it's instantaneous, with an apparent progression or lead up to it. The need, the perceived need, you might even call it obsession, to be in control. And in so doing, being in control, generating fear of loss of control, fear of unwanted things happening, especially if there's a certain sense or even direct awareness that unwanted things have happened before. And I wish to prevent that from happening again. And the unwanted thing seems connected to the feeling of being out of control. So I don't want to be out of control again. And I ask you, sitting here on these cushions or chairs, where's the danger? Where's the danger? The only apparent danger can come from some unfolding, dynamic, flowing force that appears threatening from within. And when fear is operating either consciously or unconsciously, it causes human beings to attempt to control and manipulate their experience. And yet even this controlling and manipulating tendency is arising and passing, belonging to no one. And in some human beings, the controlling or manipulating tendency, that arena, if you will, seems quite large. Sometimes it's given a name, ego. Its true nature is arising and passing like everything else. So here's an experience, controlling tendency arises in relation to this. What's watching that? Sometimes it's enough to just see the experience without actually yet seeing how it's being related to. These are like lenses, right? It's being related to through controlling or manipulating, and sometimes spontaneously. Not only is the experience seen, but the relationship to the experience is seen, and both reveal their nature. Arising and passing, nothing solid. And so then it appears that one is abiding as arising and passing itself. But that's the living dynamic truth. And even as life continues to offer itself in ever new and different configurations and arrangements, and this is what it's always been doing. And yet as the depth of watching opens, then all things can be seen to be as they are, and in a certain sense, a rightness that's not polarized with wrongness arises. Some people describe it as everything is in its place. Everything is as it should be. The word suchness is used in certain Buddhist teachings, or isness. Different words to say the same thing. The watching is not the mind. Notice this. The watching is not the mind. When I say the mind, I mean the intellect or the thought. Look closely and see the watching can't be located or pinned down inside the brain. What is it that's watching? The eyes seeing, the ears hearing, the body feeling. What is it that's watching the breath happening? The watching is not the mind. The watching is not the thought. The watching is silent, still, vast. It is presence itself. The watching is presence. And the thought then says the presence that's watching is present, as if there's anything other than present. Now the watching can't be taken up by the mind, by the thought, by the plan, and used to cultivate something else, or make something else happen. Because the watching is what's seeing everything happening. It's completely natural, spontaneous. And all mind activity happens within this watching. Now the watching is also completely impersonal. Although the mind sometimes says, I am watching. Notice the impersonalness of it, not in the negative sense of impersonal, as we sometimes use that term, impersonal meaning sort of cold or dry or negative. He was impersonal. No, impersonal in the sense that it's common to all. Bias free. Notice the watching is bias free. And preference free. There's actually nothing of the personality in it, and yet the personality can be watched, can it? And how annoying it can sometimes be when someone is completely invested in their personality. Especially when their personality seems very different than your own. Watching is impersonal, in the most liberating sense of the word. It's a beginning glimpse into wholeness, into completeness, into fulfillment, into unicity. It's a beginning glimpse into this the watching is. Before this glimpse into completeness, wholeness, suchness, isness of life, before this glimpse, life is felt to be a series of pushes and pulls, struggles, moments of ease, moments of dis-ease, attempts to improve, attempts to remove, cyclical, repetitive thinking, feeling, behaviors, choices, relationships, and varying degrees of investment in all of it as oneself or something that's happening to oneself. The watching not only allows it to be seen that every iota of what I just said is changing constantly, but the watching, the seeing of this dynamic flow, is the gateway between separation and unicity. The gateway between separateness and isolation and unicity or beingness, wholeness, completeness. Now, sometimes in these talks, there's a certain part that is the key, in a way. Here it comes. When watching becomes apparent to the seemingly separate self, or I, or me, it seems to create a space or a distance between what is happening and the seeing or watching of what is happening. But watching actually is not creating the space that appears. Watching is the space. Watching is the empty, silent, still, witnessing, spacious presence that the appearance of oneself arises in. What did I just say? The appearance of oneself arises in silent, witnessing, presence, watching. By oneself, I mean anything that follows the words I am, whether that be a thought, belief, which is just a crystallized thought, assumption, which is a crystallized belief, whether that be I am the body, I am the thought, I am the feeling, I am the memory, I am the sensation, I am the behavior, I am a man, I am a woman, I am old, I am young, whatever follows the two words I am. This, to varying degrees, in many cases, is believed to be oneself. And what's critical to see is that the watching is just happening. It's happening spontaneously. You can't and don't do the watching. There's no driver of the ship of watching. The watching is a complete non-doing. It's just being. Watching is just being. And as this clarifies, then everything that is, you could say, being watched is being also. Being itself. And so then the watching is the gateway into the realization of being, the gateway into essential nature. if a watching is the essence of meditation, then as that watching completes itself, you could say, or is freed into itself, unto itself, then it's the gateway into the essential nature of what life is, which is what we are. And you may wonder, many people do, where does thought and belief come into all of this, other than it's part of what is watched? Because so many moments seem to be occupied, filled up with thinking about things. And not only thinking about these things, but believing, sometimes consciously and sometimes not so consciously, believing this or that based on the thought. And one may have heard that all the mind is thought. That's what it is. And this may even seem experientially true. It may be what one would really bank on and say, yes, that's true. But thoughts, like everything else, originate in the infinite. And come into being like everything. And dissolve back into the infinite like everything. This is infinity unfolding. Everything that's happening is infinity unfolding. No exception. You could say it's all part of the game of manifestation or creativity. And the thoughts aren't actually going anywhere. And ultimately they don't mean anything. And they don't do anything more than attempt to describe life. They describe objects or experiences relative to place and process. And they make for conversations. For our investigation here, there are two kinds of thought. One is abstract thought. And the other is natural or creative thought. Abstract thought is concerned with apparent future and apparent past. Things like, will that person that I met call me? When I meditated before, my mind went crazy. Or my knee ached. How will I pay that bill? I wonder if they will accept me. I don't want to do that, etc., etc., etc. These are abstract thoughts. Natural or creative thoughts look like, I need to pump up the tires before I drive to the meditation center. When I fry onions first and then add the rice, it tastes better. I'll get her the bigger cake, and then there'll be some left over for me. And of course, the poets and the scientists are always using creative thought in ever new and beautiful ways. Now, all thoughts just appear. They arise, they form, they disappear, whether they are abstract or creative. And it seems we can direct our creative thinking about certain things in certain ways. And yet these thoughts that are apparently directed or created, see, we think that we're creating the thought. I had that thought. Or as the poet Goethe said, the most important thing is to have an original thought. There's an idea, there's a thought that I created that thought. A life is living through us. And one of the ways it's living through us is through thinking. Now here's another key in this talk. Abstract thinking and the associated feelings, perceptions that go with it. Maintain the dream of separation. And the sense of suffering that comes with that. Just let's go through the few that I mentioned one more time. Will that person that I met call me? When I meditated before, my mind went crazy, or my knee ached, or I got sleepy. How will I pay that bill? I wonder if they will accept me. I don't want to do that. Just some examples. These thoughts and the associated feelings and perceptions generate and maintain the sense of separation. Must they, though? If the nature of life is just unfolding itself through thoughts, whether they're abstract or creative, must those thoughts generate a sense of separation, of trouble or strife? And here's the key. They do and they will when they're invested in as true. And furthermore, they do and they will when they're invested in as mine. And the more deeply they're claimed as mine, the more deeply they possibly conflict. The watching not only reveals the difference between abstract and creative thinking, but as the feeling or idea or view of separateness is revealed to be a dream. Just like the night dream is seen to be a dream when the waking state takes over. When the waking state arises, following the so-called dream of night, how many human beings say the dream was real and the waking state is a dream? It's so deep, agreed upon and accepted. That's the dream, and this is real. And what I'm saying is that through the power of watching, and specifically seeing the difference between abstract thinking and creative thinking, seeing the feeling or view, belief, perception, of separateness as a dream, then naturally, abstract thinking is unhooked from. You don't own it. It can arise in any form and way it wants. It can be as weird and nasty as it likes. It can be as creatively abstract as it likes. And it doesn't matter at all. It's just a playing out of life, of consciousness. It's part of freedom. It's unfolding energy belonging to no one. And again, very clear, no one makes the sense of separation shift from apparent dream into reality of non-separation. It just happens naturally through the illuminating power of watching. Abstract thinking can still arise. And it does. And And the shift is it's not identified with. There's no one there who ever owned it or claimed it as one's own. It's a mirage. And interestingly, as a, you could almost say, byproduct, it doesn't happen as frequently. And when the mind is thinking, it's thinking more creatively. So abstract thinking isn't a problem. It's an appearance, a form of experience that arises and passes. Just like the night dream appears. Even the nightmares are never real problems, are they? Even the first moments of recognition, clear seeing of the nightmare as a dream, begins to dissipate its aggravating influence. Oh, wow, it's just a nightmare. I'm okay. That's not me. That's over. And maybe mommy or daddy said that to us when we were little. It's just a nightmare. It's just a dream. It's over. It's okay. And the problem, in a way, with that is that the okayness is linked to a perception, a belief, that now you're in the waking state and everything's okay. You are the waking state and everything's okay. The nightmare is over. That was just a dream. What's realized through the power of watching is that even the sense of separateness is part of the beautiful manifestation of creative life unfolding itself. It's not a problem to solve. It's a reality to experience, rather than a dream to remove. And it's a reality that's experienced by no one. No one experiences unicity, and no one experiences separation. They're just appearances. The energetic shift that this is about, our time together, is into clear seeing. From watching what is happening into seeing that what is happening to no one. And this is the essence of meditation. So in a very real way, life is living itself through all of this, including, of course, the silent watching. This is life living itself through the silent watching. And thoughts are never a problem that need to be removed or changed or altered. There is no wrong thought, even though there's a teaching about right thought. It was given for the purpose of distillation, for the purpose of helping humans see that as thoughts move towards more creative, loving, skillful, kind expressions in the mind and behavior, it seems to produce or contribute to a happier world. But before that idea arose of a right thought or a wrong thought, how could there have been any thought in one category or the other? The natural watching takes over. Instead of it being something that happens when one assumes a certain posture in a certain place, on a meditation retreat, watching is the matrix Watching is the fundamental essence of awareness. And it's the gateway into everything being as it is. And this opening into everything being as it is reveals that everything being as it is a manifestation of seamless, inseparable wholeness. Nothing outside. When there's nothing outside, then there's nothing inside. These are just perceptions that arise and pass. And in that, then, there's nothing to get and there's nothing to get rid of. And the gateway of watching opens into clear vision of what the middle way actually is. One of the greatest teachings of the Jesus that we know, have heard of, and there were many great teachings, but one of the greatest was recorded in the Coptic Gospel of Thomas. It's a book, a teaching that didn't make it into the so-called New Testament, but perhaps it should have. This teaching comes right at the end of the Gospel of Thomas. Jesus is asked, "When will the kingdom come? When will the kingdom come?" He responds, "It will not come by waiting for it. It will not be a matter of saying, 'Here it is,' or 'There it is.' But rather, the kingdom is spread upon the earth, and men do not see it." Men and women do not see it because they're busy living and believing in the dream of separation. And it's this dream that imagines a home or a kingdom someplace else, rather than right here, before and in our very eyes. It will not come by waiting for it. It will not be a matter of saying, "Here it is," or "There it is." The kingdom is spread out upon the earth, and yet men do not see it. The essence of meditation is the awakening into the kingdom here. Let's have just a couple of minutes to sit together if we could.